Today, glad to see each one of you here with us and those that are joining us online. When we look at our lives as Christians and the purpose of our daily lives together, one of the things that we see throughout the scriptures is being called to be lights. And Jesus told his followers in Matthew chapter 5, verse 15, that we are the light of the world. And that you are the light of the world, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. And that's a purpose that sometimes is easy for us to get, but it really is who we are, who we're supposed to be. You are light, and we are here as light. And what is the implication of that? Well, there's requirements for us and things that we ought to emulate to be the light of the world like Jesus wants us to be. Now, I'm going to ask you something that may appear to be completely unrelated, but when is the last time you complained? Maybe today? Yesterday? A few months ago? A few weeks ago? I'm certainly going to be preaching to myself this morning on this particular part. Who is free from complaining? I could be a professional complainer. If it was a profession, I could do it. I would be overly qualified. But, we complain about the weather, and one of my dad's, favorite sayings, which I think is a typical dad joke, is we've got two temperatures in the church building, too hot and too cold. And so we complain about the heat. We complain if it's too hot, if it's too cold. We complain about traffic lights, where stop signs are located, and why do they put that here. We complain about food. We look in the refrigerator. We say there's nothing to eat. We look in the closet and say I have nothing to wear. And we complain about being around people who complain. And so usually not looking at ourselves. But, what does this have to do with being light? Well, if you listen to the scripture that was read this morning in Philippians chapter 2, not complaining has a lot to do with being a light to the world. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 and 16, it says, "Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain." And so we see here that Paul tells us to do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may do what? That you may be lights in the world. And so if you are the grumbling and the complaining one, are you a light to the world? I like the story of the man who decided to join a monastery, and one of the rules of this particular monastic group was that you were only allowed to say two words at the end of every 10 years. If you can imagine. At the end of the first 10 years, he said, "Food bad." And at the end of the second 10 years, he said, "Bed hard." And at the end of the third 10 years, his 30th anniversary, he said, "I quit." And the monk in charge responded, "That doesn't surprise me a bit. You've done nothing but complain ever since you got here." And so that's the way that we are sometimes. We are very good at complaining. I wonder if that's an apt description of any of us, that we've done nothing but complain. And, when it comes to the use of our tongue, which we've talked a lot about, is, we're careful, not to slander and not to gossip and not to swear and not to use God's name in vain. But sometimes we pay little attention to the corrosive words or the complaining and criticizing that so easily flows from our mouth. So listen to what Paul says to these Christians. He says, "Do all things without grumbling or disputing." So you're not to complain, not to argue, not to murmur. Do things in your life without complaining. Imagine that. Imagine not complaining about the people that you work with, or not complaining about your boss, or about your kids, or about the teachers at school, or about other parents, or about your parents, or complaining about how people are driving, or people are always in your way. a life that is completely free from complaint. Now, this really hit me this week because we are in a situation right now where I still have a job, but my company has a hiring freeze, and so there's people that have left the company, and one that I mentioned a few weeks ago to you, a co-worker of mine in Atlanta that passed away suddenly, and that position hasn't been filled yet. And so the ones of us that are still working have a lot to do. And Randy is so centrally located that he is called on a lot to do different things. And, you know, just about every Zoom meeting we have, you know, my boss always says, "Oh, Randy is such a team player. He's doing this, this, and this." And, of course, you know, one of my friends, he texts me during that and says, "How much do they pay you for being a team player?" You know, and so, you know, that's not really helping my frame of mind when those kind of things are said. And so, I appreciate the compliment, but I keep having people tell me, you know, "You're being abused. You need to stand up for yourself." And so this week I was really feeling that way. In fact, one of my coworkers called me up and asked me how things were going, so I told him. And the next day he called me and said, "Do I need to send you some Snickers, or are you better today?" And so, you know, and then I reached out to another coworker to help me on some things, and he was so friendly and nice, and I thought, that's a really good attitude that he has. And I realized my attitude the previous day had not been, you know, so cheerful. And so these things are really, really applying to me because I can look at the situation a lot of different ways. Number one, I can see that I have a job and a lot of people don't. And so the things that I'm going through work-wise are probably temporary as far as the workload, and I can adjust my attitude. And Paul is telling the Christian brethren here in Philippi that if they want to be lights into the world, you know, being a complainer is not consistent with that, with being a light in the world. What this does is, you know, how do we feel when we are grumbling? I know how I feel when that happens. I'm thinking, I'm too good for this. I'm the center of the universe right now. I'm putting myself at the center of the universe. Everything that's happening is affecting me. This is not something that I deserve. I should not have to go through this. I should not have to wait. I should not have any suffering. All my wants and my needs should be satisfied. And if they're not, then I'll complain. And so grumbling is saying, I know better and I deserve better. Basically, what it's doing is it's bringing God into my personal court and determining He's not doing the job that He should be doing. That if I was all powerful, then things would be different. So we need to really watch our attitude and make sure that we're not judging God to be inadequate and unfaithful to us, and that God's not doing what He should be doing. God's turned all the traffic lights green as I go down Highway 31 on my way to work. God should make sure that I don't have to cross any train tracks where a train is going to stop me and make me late. And I should not have to wait in line because I need to be somewhere. And so we get very self-centered when we have these kind of attitudes. And even if we're not overtly saying words of complaining, sometimes it's in our heart. In fact, my boss called me, not to talk too much about work, but my boss called me Friday and told me that they were really close to hiring somebody in Tennessee and somebody in Atlanta. He says, "That's really going to be good for you." And I commented, "Yeah, that's going to really help out a lot. And I'm sorry that I've complained so much about the workload." He said, "You don't ever complain about it." He said, "You've been super about it." And I thought, okay, well, the complaining's all been in my head. And I haven't been, good thing I haven't been verbalizing it, because he thinks I've been a trooper and a team player, but internally I'm not feeling that way. And so sometimes the discontent and the complaining is really in our heart, whether we express it or not. And so we need to understand what God tells us here. Don't be this way. And so let's look at this passage here. Philippians 2, 14 through 16. Why do we need to do all things without grumbling or arguing? What does he say here? He says that you will shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. So what we see here, hold on just 1 second. Slide out of order. So, if grumbling and arguing are happening, what does that mean about me being blameless? What does it mean about me being innocent? It means that I'm not those two things. I'm not those two things. If you're grumbling and bickering and complaining, then you're not blameless or innocent. Well, that's not a situation that we want to be in, do we? We do not want to be considered to not be blameless. I want to be blameless. And grumbling means that we're not without blemish. So this idea of being overly critical is expressed in the Bible quite a bit. And Solomon expresses this quite a bit in the book of Proverbs. And before I read these passages, I'll say, Solomon, in many of these passages, he focuses on the quarrelsome person being the wife or the woman. And it could just as easily be the husband. So just keep that in mind as we read these things. You husbands don't get all uppity because the wife is being addressed here. But Proverbs chapter 21, verse 9, better to live on the corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Proverbs 21, verse 19, better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. Proverbs 27, verse 15, a quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. Paul tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 3 that an elder must not be given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. Proverbs 26, verse 21, as charcoal to embers and as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. And another one in Proverbs 22, verse 10, drive out the mocker and out goes the strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. And so you see here, you might look at these, especially these passages in Proverbs, and think maybe one of these wives that Solomon picked wasn't the best choice because he's talking a lot about the quarrelsome wife. But these things are very real and should be put away from us. And the wise writer tells us that the one that has this kind of attitude causes a lot of problems. Certainly in the Scriptures, there is no place that I know of that complaining and criticizing are more graphically depicted than in the case of the children of Israel as they have left the land of Egypt. So these adults who came out of Egypt, what happened to them? Well, they were denied entrance into the Promised Land because of their complaining and their criticizing, which was evidence of their faithlessness. And so you look at numerous examples, especially in Numbers 13 and 14. You remember that the people of Israel, they were poised on the edge of the Promised Land for the first time. The 12 spies were sent in to spy out the land, explore it, and return with a report. And 10 of the 12 spies reported, "We cannot attack these people. They are stronger than we." Verse 32 of Numbers 13 says, "They brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw in it are of great height, and we saw the Nephilim, the son of Anak, who came from the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them.'" So Joshua and Caleb, the two faithful spies whose names we remember, they affirmed the details of the account, but they maintained that God was able to help them take the Promised Land, that God has given this to us. They wanted to take it. And of course, we know that they are the only two that actually went into the land of the adults. And so let's notice what complaining and criticizing led to here in the account in Numbers. First of all, it completely ignores God's potential, because God was going to give them the land, and the report of the 10 spies was given from a godless perspective. They were focused on what the giants looked like and the way that they felt when they were around the giants, and totally were not thinking about God. Surely if God had brought them through the plagues of Egypt, which we studied Wednesday night, if He had done those things and had been able to open the sea to save them and provided them water from the rock when they were thirsty, surely God was going to be with them when they can deal with the giants in the land. There's no doubt that God could deal with the giants. But you know, they listened to the bad report. They ignored God's potential, forgetting what it was that He had already done, and forgot that He keeps His promises. The second thing is that they led themselves to wrong conclusions and bad judgments. Wrong conclusions and bad judgments. My computer seems to be locked up here, so may not be able to advance. We'll see what happens. But the grumbling Israelites said in Numbers 14, verse 3, "Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" Well, you know, that's ridiculous. They certainly would not want to go back to Egypt. That's where they were enslaved. And so they brought themselves to wrong conclusions based on the murmuring. They also pitied themselves. Over and over we see in this section of Scripture that they said, only if we had died in Egypt. And they're looking back to Egypt. Only if we had died in Egypt. Oh, let us die in this desert. And so those given to complaining and murmuring and criticizing often feel very sorry for themselves with feelings of self-pity. It also led to fear. You know, twice in this account, Joshua and Caleb beg the people not to fear. Don't do this. Don't have this attitude. But without God, they felt threatened. They felt insecure. And often people in difficult circumstances, if they're not thinking about God, they feel overwhelmed. And this bred rebellion. Joshua and Caleb said, "Do not rebel against the Lord." And the Israelites were ready to elect new leaders and to stone those who would reject their rebellious plans. But the worst thing about this is that the grumbling and complaining and criticizing resulted in judgment against them from God, that they were no longer going to be able to enter into the land. So they criticized and complained and ignored God's presence, God's power, and God punished his people. And so certainly that's a lesson that we can look at and avoid that type of attitude. They complained about everything. They complained about the food. They complained about the water. They complained about the enemies that they would have to go up against. Several years ago when we did a post-camp survey, we asked for feedback from our staff. And one of the staff members had so many complaints that there was not room on the survey for them to write them down, so they attached a separate document. And among the things that they complained about is that, why do we only have ranch dressing? We had cornbread and we didn't have any butter. And what? How can people eat cornbread without butter? And the person that is advancing the PowerPoint slides, you know, for the hymns is a half second too fast. We can't see the end of the verse on the song before it goes to the next slide. And so it was point after point after point. And you can imagine what I did with that. Threw it into the circular file. This is camp. You know, this is not the Hilton. This is not the Renaissance spa. You know, this is camp, and you know, we didn't have butter. But so you see, sometimes we have these attitudes, and the Israelites, yeah, they had been released from a land of bondage. And as soon as they get out, they start complaining and looking back at how great everything was in Egypt. No, it wasn't great. They had revisionist history in their heads. And what they were showing is that they really had no trust in God. And Paul uses that when he is talking here in Philippians about what it means to be a light. The Israelites were not being a light to the world. They were not shining because they were grumbling. They were complaining. Paul says that is not consistent with being a light. And if we ever needed this lesson, I've already told you I need it, but the world needs this right now. There is nothing so minute and so insignificant that somebody will not figure out a way to complain about it. Now, how many of us go to the grocery right now and we get so irritated because now people are going the wrong way in the aisle? That's something that never affected us before it became a rule. But, I'm looking at the sticker on the floor. You know, somebody paid to print that decal. You know, it clearly says, when you walk in here, don't go this way. And so we find so many things to get so agitated about. Are we really acting like God's children? So one of the defining characteristics that separates us from the crooked and perverse generation, Paul says, is not grumbling or disputing. So let's be a light to the world. Let's be different than the world. Let's represent Christ. God has us here. We're in the middle of much darkness, but we're going to shine as lights. You are the light of the world. This is not something that's supposed to be optional. If we're children of God, then we must be light. And a life that is free from complaint is one that really makes an impact. And those of you that have been here at Elliottsville for a long time, you can remember those that used to be here among us that have passed on, that you hardly ever heard complain and hardly heard them grumble. I'm thinking about Prince and Edith Schatz in particular, that they were not in great health, and I know that they had aches and pains, and you never heard them complain about it. Another dad joke that just popped into my mind is the old man that goes to the doctor and says that his knee is hurting, and the doctor looks at him and says, "Well, you're 99 years old. What do you expect?" He said, "Well, my other one is 99 years old too, and it doesn't hurt." So I never heard the Schatz complain about their health. They were here, and I knew they didn't always feel good, especially when Prince was undergoing cancer treatments, but went through that in such a positive way. Through all the difficulties that people have and through the suffering that they have, there are many that when you ask them how they're doing, they don't tell you. But sometimes we know that there's people that we don't ask how they're doing because we're afraid they're going to tell us. It set them apart. And in the midst of a crooked and twisted and broken generation, we have those that shine as lights. And it certainly can be an encouragement to others if we shine as lights in the world. The Gospel of John, in John chapter 1, opens with Jesus coming into a dark world. And the world did not comprehend him. Jesus came and they did not receive him. John chapter 3 tells us that people love darkness rather than light. And so that is a theme that John carries out in his writings that we are to shine as lights in the darkness. We're to shine as lights in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation. And shining as lights is not always easy, but that's what we have been called to do. And so we need to remember what Paul instructed us to do. We also need to think about the life of Christ, because if anyone ever had a, quote, right to complain, you know, it certainly would be Jesus. There wasn't anything that he did that was worthy of criticism. But he was criticized, you know, from the time that he started his ministry to the time that he died on the cross. What Jesus experienced was unjust. It was evil. It was unfair. But what did Jesus do when he was scourged? It tells us that he didn't say a word. He doesn't open up his mouth, and he becomes our offering for sin. And so when we get all uppity and think that we have a right to complain, we've really lost sight of who we are, and we've lost sight of who Christ is. We can live a very unhappy life if we want to. Or we can live a life that is a light to the world. And so we need to use what the Scriptures tell us to transform ourselves. You know, people will complain about you, and we're not perfect. And we need to realize that others are not perfect. And not to pick each other apart. We fail. People extend mercy to us, and we need to extend mercy to others. I know that personally we don't usually live up to our own expectations. We don't always do what we know that we should do. We know that we should do better. And we don't live up to the standard that we see in the Scripture. So we're very grateful that God is kind to us and forgiving of us and merciful to us, so that we can stay in Him. And so we need to show that toward others as well. And so I hope these things will be useful to you. It's a very simple lesson, and I know it's one that it's not anything that you haven't heard before, that we need to not have attitudes of grumbling and complaining. But it certainly makes it so powerful when you see that Paul says you can't be a light to the world if that's your attitude. So let's remember that. We need to think first, and we need to talk less, and we need to control our tongue, and we need to control our hearts too, so that we don't have the attitudes that the Israelites had that kept them out of the land. Because if we have the attitude of the Israelites spiritually, you know, we'll be kept out of the land, the promised land as well. So we need to remember that. I hope you will take this lesson to heart, and that we can be lights to the world and be an encouragement to others instead of a detriment. So if we can help you in any way, if you're subject to the invitation, we invite you to come while we stand.
God calling, yes, shall.